Some stations on shortwave sound like they've been around since the dinosaur era, presenting stories the way they did in the 160s, 70s, and 80,000 years ago. Snap out of your Mesozoic mood and switch to Radio Netherlands, contemporary continental radio from the heart of Northwest Europe.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
We're sorry. All circuits are busy now. Will you please try your call again later? This is a recording.
Ha! And that's not the only problem we've had this week. We've had a bit of this, too.
Media Network, Radio Netherlands Weekly Communications Review with Jonathan Marks.
When the gun gets tough, the tough get going.
No matter how loud we create explosive sound effects here in the wireless studio, they can't compare with the recent enormous disturbances happening on the sun's surface. It may be 93 million miles away, but the high energy radiation ejected from the sun quickly interacts with the Earth's environment. On Monday, March the 9th, the solar flare on the sun went off, and as a result, in the early hours of Monday the 13th, an enormous impulse was given to the Earth's geomagnetic field. Recently, we also saw the launch of the US space shuttle, so I asked our science correspondent in North America, Dave Rosenthal, whether this unusual solar activity has had any effect on the flights of the shuttle.
Well, Jonathan, these are by far the most disturbed solar terrestrial conditions the shuttle's ever operated under. I think this week, the Fredericksburg A Index, that's a measure of how disturbed the Earth's magnetic field is, peaked at 248. That's the second highest ever recorded. So right now on the face of the sun, there's a region they've numbered at 5395. It's a naked eye visible. If you look under using a safe solar filter, it's approximately 60 times the size of the Earth on the face of the sun. And that has been what's been causing most of the difficulties. This region is rotating slowly across the face of the sun, and it won't rotate off the disk until the 18th or 19th of the month. So we can look for these disturbances to continue.
A word of warning, though, never, never look directly at the sun with the naked eye. You could seriously damage the retina. Several calls to Radio Netherlands' answer line have asked how the solar activity can affect satellite communication. Well, first of all, you have problems with what's called spacecraft charging. Solar particles hit one side of the spacecraft and charge it to very high voltages with respect to the other side. Although most satellites ensure that their artificial grounding system is tied to one point, this effect can happen so quickly that the induced charges can damage sensitive electronic equipment on board. Sensitive microelectronics are also affected by high-energy particles which penetrate the spacecraft and reset or upset microprocessors. Not only is communication with the spacecraft liable to interruption, but other electronics on board controlling the satellite's attitude in space, with respect to the Earth, can be set off balance too. Essentially, ground command stations lose control of their satellites for a while until they can reset and reprogram the computers on board. And finally, there's the satellite drag problem. The increased number of particles in the low-orbit environment of the atmosphere can bump into the spacecraft and slow it down. This causes the satellite to drop into a slightly lower orbit. And if no fuel is aboard the craft to allow a course correction, well, the date at which the satellite will finally orbit so low that it burns up in the atmosphere becomes nearer than planned. The U.S. Space Environment Services Center in Boulder, Colorado, has been examining the increased solar activity over the last few weeks in detail and advising satellite owners that without corrective action, their satellites may last a lot less longer than they'd planned. But it's not all bad news.
The positive, of course, is the fact that the Aurora Borealis has been seen tremendously further south than it normally is. For example, this week it was seen in Key West, Florida, which is in the subtropical latitudes.
Indeed, we've seen some beautiful northern light displays here in Holland, and I believe they've also been seen down there in Australia with the southern lights. Now, enough science for a moment. Let's look at Central Europe and Austria in particular. In Austria, some peculiar radio developments have recently been taking place. But first, a bit of history. Until 1955, the four Allied forces ran their own radios in their respective sectors of Austria and Vienna. Following independence, the Austrian government took over, but the national broadcast station was strongly influenced by those in power. About 20 years ago, the press in Austria campaigned for independent public broadcasting, and this was established in the form of Austrian Radio, or ORF in German. The ORF now runs two national radio networks, plus a host of regional stations, so there's certainly choice these days. Although there's no private commercial radio in Austria, the country is surrounded by Switzerland, Germany, Italy, Yugoslavia, and Hungary, where it is allowed in one form or another. And many of the commercial stations deliberately aim their programmes at the Austrian listener. Wolf Harrant, editor of Radio Austria International's German language media programme, is on the line now with a story on how some people recently tried to start private radio on their own. Wolf.
Well, Jonathan, today you can listen to foreign private radio practically all over Austria, and the print media are not too happy about that development. If there is additional advertising money available, they want to cash in themselves. Consequently, negotiations have started between the PTT, the ORF, and the private sector, led by the print media, to establish in the near future private radio in Austria. Now, this is where the happy handful comes in, the fans of free or alternative radio. We never had hobby or commercial or clandestine pirates in Austria. About a year ago, one group started a series of five or six short transmissions with a leftish political tendency, and that was it. Now, for good reasons, these people are afraid they might be left behind or ignored in a future private radio. And so they did something about it. A couple of weeks ago, they joined forces with the FRRL, the Federation of European Free Radio, invited for a roundtable discussion amongst themselves to propagate free radio for Austria, and planned to transmit the proceedings live on an FM transmitter to the Greater Vienna area. I asked the man in charge, FERL's Dr. Christoph Lindenmeier, a Swiss, whether he really believed that the postal authorities would tolerate their broadcasting plans.
Das wird also für die Beamten in den Teilwagen ein freies Wochenende werden, weil bekannt ist.
Dr. Lindenmeier was quite optimistic that no intervention would take place, given the fact that date and venue of the meeting were publicly known. On the contrary, Dr. Günther Sellinger from the postal authorities told me that, of course, they would intervene if the broadcast was really started.
Sollte also ohne Bewilligung eine Ausstrahlung stattfinden, wird die Fernmeldebehörde bzw. die Funküberwachungsstelle sicher in der Angelegenheit einschreiten.
So on Saturday, the 18th of February, we were quite curious and, all right, at 18 hours local time, springtime radio indeed started on 103.5 MHz.
Heute, den 18. Februar 1989, hört ihr das erste Mal in Österreich freies Radio auf 103,5. Das Roundtable-Gespräch der Europäischen Föderation freier Radios.
Radio Frühling. It took only 2 minutes and the PTT's Funküberwachung appeared on the scene. Dr. Lindenmeier tried to make the best of it and obviously hoped to kick up a major row.
Entschuldigen Sie mich, wenn es etwas chaotisch her und zugeht. Haben Sie hier einen Hausdurchsuchungsbefehl für hier? Dann bitte verlassen Sie dies. Es ist eine geschlossene Versammlung.
But all remained peaceful. The PTT officer cited the relevant paragraph of the law, asked to see the transmitter, and immediately afterwards the live transmission ended.
Ich bin Beamter der Funküberwachung und ich ersuche Sie, diese Funkanlage, die hier...
That was the end of it. Naturally, the organizers had expected such an intervention, and I believe even hoped for it, to stir up emotions. So they had prepared for a second transmitter somewhere else, and that one took over with a pre-recorded emergency program calling itself Radio Self-Defense.
Radio Notwehr 103,5. Radio Notwehr 103,5. Radio Notwehr 103,5.
Im Moment wird auf dem Leopoldsberg die erste öffentliche freie Radiosendung in Österreich von Postfüchsen und Strapazisten abgedreht.
In wishful thinking they had expected and thus reported an intervention of the state police, although that didn't even take place. Dr. Lindenmayer now denounced Austrian journalism, calling it the worst one in the world. And he called the PTT officials paranoids, remarking that those insane people are most dangerous.
Ich muss auch sagen, das Verhalten der österreichischen Behörden, paranoide Leute können sehr gefährlich werden.
Meanwhile, all was quiet on the free radio front, with the exception of the PTT's direction finders taking their bearings. And then the illegal transmitter was officially confiscated. And the whole thing had lasted hardly half an hour. Somehow we have to live with ORF's monopoly again and dearly miss the revelations of free, alternative, first-class radio.
Amazing stuff. Thank you, Wolf. Now we turn to the subject of satellite radio. In recent weeks, we've talked about how satellite dishes are springing up in various parts of Europe, not only for the new television broadcast satellites, but also because some channels carry satellite radio services as well. Media Network listener Philip Dampier, who lives in the United States, contacted us with a story on how he's been hearing several international broadcasters on his satellite dish. They're not broadcasting to him at all, though. Philip's comments are presented now by Pete Myers.
I bought what's called a sound SC1 unit from the American manufacturer of Heil yesterday. Now, this is a specialized receiver selling for $450 that attaches to a home satellite receiving system. It allows you to receive special audio signals transmitted in a format called SCPC. The best I can compare the sound to is the barrage of RTTY signals you hear on the shortwave that comes across in that buzzsaw sound. Having set up the receiver, I can find the feeds of many international broadcasters connecting their studios with the transmitter site. With the enormous growth in relay exchanges, the number of channels is not insignificant, and I get most of the programs in hi-fi mono instead of restricted shortwave. Turn the dish towards the Canadian Anik D1 satellite, for instance, and you can find Radio Japan, Radio France International, several Canadian Broadcasting Corporation's domestic services, including the Northern Quebec programs, two channels carrying BBC World Service, plus all of Radio Canada International services. Swing the dish round to look at the Galaxy 2 satellite, and there's more BBC World Service, plus United Nations Radio and the Christian Science Monitor. And over on the Westar 4 satellite is the Voice of Free China feeding relay transmitters in Florida, family radio in stereo, and what sounds like an FM service from somewhere, all in Japanese. Finally, on the American SATCOM 2 satellite, I can now hear programs for the Voice of America destined for both US and overseas relay stations, Radio Mati for Cuba, the Armed Forces radio and TV services. Well, the list continues. Of course, satellite monitoring of international radio feeds requires more investment than a standard shortwave receiver. You need a suitable satellite dish, plus the proper type of decoder. The greatest variety seems to be on the Canadian Anik satellite, and maybe there will be feeds from Austria and China there next month when Radio Austria International and Radio Beijing start feeding programs for relay via Radio Canada International's Sackville relay station. With one exception, all the signals are hi-fi quality. The odd one out is Radio Deutsche Welle in Cologne. It sounds to me as though this is still received off-air from shortwave and then relayed again. I have noticed Radio Moscow is establishing a direct satellite feed of their world and North American service, according to Irina Korolovia, head of Radio Moscow's transcription services. This feed appeared before, using telephone quality audio back during the Reagan-Gorbachev summit. But now, Radio Moscow is planning a permanent, better quality feed, mostly to service Cuba's relay of Radio Moscow, but also to try to sell North American commercial radio on broadcasting some of their live programming, including their planned call-in shows.
And that's it for this edition of Media Network. Hope you've enjoyed the program. And remember, we're always interested in your comments. For the moment, it's back soon. Bye for now. And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.